You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back in the early days of our planet, how did lightning, swirling gases, erupting volcanoes give way to life, called what we used to call the chemical evolution of life? Well, over 50 years ago, Stanley Miller and Harold Urey conducted their famous spark flask experiment to find out. They hooked up an apparatus of tubes and flasks and wires. They shot electrical sparks through a mixture of gases thought to represent Earth's early atmosphere. And after about a week of all of this, they ended up with a number of different amino acids, the so-called building blocks of life, right there, right at the bottom of this giant flask after all this action had occurred. Well, fast forward, after Miller's death last year, a few of his old grad students, they dug out that box of samples from the original experiment. They analyzed them with superior 50 years later, lab technology available today, and they found a few surprises. Joining me now to talk about those results out this week in the journal Science is Antonio Lascano. He is Distinguished Professor on the Origins and Evolution of Life in the Science Department at the National Autonomous University of Mexico in Mexico City, Mexico. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Lascano.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Whose idea was this?
Well, the idea came out in a very funny way because a couple of years ago, my friend and colleague Jeff Beda, who was also a very good friend of Stanley Miller, he and I were invited to give a lecture in Texas. And just before the lecture, we were comparing our images and our PowerPoint presentations. And then Jeff asked me, "What is this small vial that you have in that figure?" And I said, "Well, it's some of the original material that Stanley synthesized in 1953, and he gave it to me." And he was absolutely surprised, and I said, "Well, why don't we analyze it to see what's there?" And perhaps a couple of weeks later, I flew to La Jolla, and we went through the boxes, the car boxes that Jeff has in his lab inherited from Stanley Miller, and we could identify without any problem the different samples that Stanley Miller had kept for over 50 years, very carefully annotated. It was quite easy, therefore, to compare them with his laboratory notebooks and then just go and actually do the analysis doing, as you just mentioned, those things with the modern techniques, which are, of course, extremely powerful compared with what was available 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And you found more stuff in that residue?
We were very surprised because part of the work was actually a reanalysis of the original samples, and we found 11 amino acids compared to the 5 that Stanley had reported. And then we decided to analyze another samples that were the outcome of what we like to call the volcanic experiment, a way in which Stanley Miller simulated this steam coming out for a volcanic cone during an eruption. And then, very much to our surprise, we found 22 different amino acids, many of them actually not the ones you find in proteins, but that's quite fine because it shows that they are not the outcome of contamination by bacteria or the handling of the samples, and as well as 5 amines. They tend to be very volatile compounds.
Mm-hmm. And were they different kinds of material that was found originally?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, these compounds had not been synthesized, had not been reported originally by Stanley Miller, and none of us really knows why he didn't publish the outcome of this volcanic experiment. I think he was so overwhelmed by the results of the classical experiment that was what was immediately what called the attention of himself, Professor Urey, and the media. But the other was a treasure in a Pandora box full of chemistry surprises.
Yeah, he didn't want to go through that again. Probably didn't want to go through the publicity and all that was inherent.
Well, he was a very shy person.
Yeah.
He was one of those scientists that was not craving to be under the spotlight. And he was a true academic. He was a true scholar. And he knew that a lot of attention was being paid to him. But I think that as he once told me, the first experiment was a very hard act to follow.
I'll bet. So now looking at your experiments and his and redoing that one over a little bit differently, what do these experiments tell us now about the origins of life and that primordial soup that may have existed?
Well, I think that the most significant conclusion that we can draw is that the chemistry of the primitive Earth was much more complex than we used to think. That would be, for me, the most important conclusion. The second conclusion is that you can actually proceed beyond the original experiments to actually look at what microenvironments may have provided. Here you have the simulation under laboratory condition of a volcanic eruption, and you see a wide, wide range of different compounds that none of us will have ever imagined. But if you look at the other experiments that other people have done more recently, like George Cody and Bob Hazen at Carnegie, like Jack Chostak in Harvard, you see that when we look at microenvironments, whether simulating the environment of the primitive Earth with clays or minerals or inside liposomes, you actually see that the virality of compounds is huge. You see that the chemical reactions are very specific. And I think we should focus more now on these specific microenvironments that can enrich the primitive Earth in different molecules. And the third conclusion is that there is always a debate about whether the organics that accumulated in the primitive Earth were synthesized on the Earth or came from outside. And for me, the answer is that, too many cooks do not spoil the soup. They can actually enrich in it.
That's a great conclusion. Being in a very Catholic country like Mexico, do you encounter difficulties in researching the scientific origins of life, the chemical evolution?
Well, I've been teaching and researching this, the origin of life for over 30 years, 35 years, and the only time I had problems was with a couple of American preachers that came from those creationist groups in the United States to preach in Mexico. Catholics don't have a problem with evolution. We teach evolution, we teach Darwinian ideas in grammar school, fourth grade, fifth graders. They become acquainted with the idea of symbiosis in the sixth grade. That's also grammar school for our standards. And the origins of life and the evolution of life are taught all along junior high school, high school, and our students at the university have at least five courses on biological evolution. So the culture may be Catholic, but Catholics don't have a problem with evolution, and I think Americans don't either. I just think that the real problem is that the creationist groups are very vocal, but I think they are very far from representing, for instance, the very sophisticated media that you find in university or in academia.
Well, Dr. Lascano, I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Antonio Lascano is the Distinguished Professor on the Origins and Evolution of Life in the science department at the National Autonomous University of Mexico in Mexico City.